This is GeekSpeak, recorded live at KUSP Studios, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Dell Small Business 360, providing resources designed to help small businesses succeed at dell.com/SB360.
It is Saturday, July 21st, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on GeekSpeak, our Week in Geek News segment, and in the second half, your questions of technology. It's time now for GeekSpeak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool. Eliminate the ninnies and the twits.
Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Tronxel. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today, we're covering the Week in Geek News, and during the second half of the show, I will welcome you to join our conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like. The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or contact us right now. Go to geekspeak.org to send us email. I'll give out that information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Cruise.io, providing local internet services including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is GeekSpeak. My name's Lyle Troxel. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, a Slacker geek and student currently working very hard and actually making money.
he's not slacking.
No, he's not slacking. I know. Miles, become a Slacker again. It's more fun that way.
Okay.
But now you have excuses of not working on stuff, so that's...
It's funny, when Miles does work, he always bites off more than he can chew.
Now, isn't that a great introduction?
Haven't you noticed that since Miles is, you know, has a girlfriend and everything, we don't see him as much anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. And the other person here, back from his absence last week, we missed you dearly, Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA.
Good morning.
Good morning. So you didn't, why weren't you here last week?
You really want to know the truth?
Oh, maybe not. Maybe it's depressing. Let's get into the geek news.
I had my little girl, and there was this huge book sale in San Jose, and I wanted to get there early.
You are such
a nerd.
So it
was all, yeah. Sorry, guys. You know what? I do tech all week long. I'm serious. All I do is play with hardware.
Wait. These aren't...
Deal with people's issues, and it just gets... It gets a little bit much sometimes, and sometimes I have to take a break. And I decided to be... Yeah.
Well, I understand. You handle technology and deal with people's issues all week, and then on the weekend, you volunteer your time to do that on air.
Yeah.
You are such a sucker. So, was the book fair great?
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Did you buy anything?
I bought a bunch of stuff. Yeah,
What was a good book you found? Share us the books that you like.
You really want to know? All right.
Just one
thing. It was actually a comic shop. Hijinks Comics, they were having their annual sidewalk sale, and they throw out tons of long boxes, and they sell them for 50 cents a piece. And I got a lot of, old books that are usually worth much, much more than that.
Cool.
Even some high-grade stuff. I was really surprised.
Now, mostly comic books, graphic novels?
Comics and graphic novels.
Nice. Yeah.
But I also collect hardbound.
Yeah. You've got a great
book
collection.
Mostly genre fiction.
Well, next year before you do that, let everybody know the week before that you're going to go do that. And it'll promote the store and you can maybe run into people. That'd be kind of nice.
You know, the guy who owns the place, Dan, is a really nice guy.
Great. Yeah. And they're the ones that do the podcast in their space? Is that a different store?
No. You know what's cool about Dan? In fact, I talked to him at the sale because he writes open source software for book. It's for cataloging mostly comics, but other books, and he makes it available to other book owners for free.
Have you tried it?
No, but I hear it's really good.
Is this one of those barcode scanners that kind of?
It's got all of that. Yeah, Rory Root at Comic Relief in Berkeley is using this. He just adopted the system and is using it. And Dan's, I guess his past life, he was a programmer, and he just does it because he figures he needs it for himself. Why not make it available for everyone else? Really cool, huh?
That's pretty cool. Well, we're gonna have to have him on talk about that, and also talk about comics.
Yeah, he was willing to talk about that.
Where's his store?
It's in San Jose. It's just called Hijinx.
Hijinx
Comics. I think it's H-I-G-I-N-X or H-I-J-I-N-X. Hijinx. But yeah, we should have him on to talk about that. He had some other stuff he's doing. And he's got a website too that he started. I don't know what it is, and I'll have to look it up, and we'll put it on the website.
Yeah, okay.
But what it does is it gathers people to actually go up and write reviews about
comics,
and graphic novels, and you can go there and learn about stuff. It's kind of more of a community site.
You know, the whole death of Captain America a while ago started me reading that whole storyline, and it's been a blast. I feel, you know, I haven't read superhero type comics since I was a kid.
That guy, Ed Brubaker, the guy who wrote that.
Good story.
It's really good, yeah.
That's the Civil War Chronicles. And it actually
it ties into
a lot of comics, so it's to read it all.
You know what? I've been going back and reading some other stuff that Brubaker has written, and, you know, all his stuff is good. I'm really impressed.
All right, let's get into technology. I mean, because even though Geek speaks about bridging the gaps between geeks, and geeks do a lot of things. We do normally handle technology. People expect that from us. So what's going on in the world, Mr. Elam?
This has been covered in the popular news, but I thought I'd bring in a geek perspective. The fact that checkers has been solved.
I didn't hear about this. The game checkers.
Some researchers have basically put a huge computer database, and every possible configuration, every possible move to checkers has been plotted. So you have a computer program that, with this database of information, can never be beat in a game of checkers.
But it can be drawn.
But you can come to a draw, yes.
If you play perfectly.
Yes. If you play a perfect game, you can bring it to a draw, but you will never be able to beat it.
That's kind of depressing. Well, you know, the thing is, I get that.
Right.
It's like tic-tac-toe. Everybody plays tic-tac for one point, and finally you're like, oh.
Right. But it's not a heuristic. A lot of computer games are rather computers that play games in opposition to a human being, AI, or something akin to it, will use some type of heuristics. They'll say, okay, and this looks like this type of pattern, and I'll try doing this type of thing. But inevitably, they'll get beaten by things. Like Deep Blue, when I was playing chess against Garry Kasparov, they were constantly tweaking the program while the game was in progress to get that result where Deep Blue was able to beat Kasparov.
I didn't know that.
But and so some people were calling foul, including Kasparov.
Yeah, because he was playing against multiple people.
Right. But at the same time, it was not it's a different problem. This one, when Deep Blue was playing Kasparov, it was a heuristics. It was look at these strategies, analyze Kasparov's playing style,
right,
that type of thing. Whereas this one is just a straight, for lack of a better term, mathematical grid of this possibility happened. Okay, now go down this decision tree and you end up with the result.
So it's like a lookup database.
Right, a lookup database with 500 billion possibilities.
Really, there are that many in checkers?
Yes. So that's a 5 followed by 20 zeros.
No.
So how many are in chess then? That's why chess doesn't do that.
That would be a number followed by 100 zeros.
Oh, isn't that a Google?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so chess is no longer a mystery. Is the world a little smaller?
You mean
smaller?
Checkers is
checkers,
not.
Excuse me.
Right.
Checkers no longer a mystery. Is the world smaller for this, Miles? I mean, are we?
I don't think so. But the next milestone, of course, is to do chess. That's not going to happen right away because, you know, 500 billion or 5 with 20 zeros is so much smaller than any number with 100 zeros behind it that it's going to take a while.
Right.
But it'll probably happen. Like with current computer technology, you can't do it. But, you know, march of technology. And I'd be really curious to see what the stats are,
Miles,
for Go.
I don't think you can do that. Like, seriously, I think that number is so large that we're talking about molecules on the planet Earth. I mean, we're talking some big numbers here.
Right. You're talking about brute force, though. But, you know, it's always possible that there's some type of, you know, reduction you can do on the data so that it represents that number, but the actual data representation is much smaller.
And you were saying that Go would be maybe the next step instead of chess?
No, I was saying that Go would be beyond chess.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know that. All right. Thank you very much, Miles, for the update on games. Sean?
You know, there was a really interesting blog posted yesterday at news, CNetNews.com. A guy's name is Don Reisinger, and he put forth the question, could Google kill the cell phone industry? Which is interesting. What's happening is the federal government is putting up for auction the 700 megahertz band.
Right.
hopefully.
For public use.
Like, for public use.
Do you know what the history of this band? Like, what was it used before? Was it a military reserve band or something?
I think this is televisions, right?
I don't know. Okay, so 700 megahertz, the government's saying, we're going to be releasing this to somebody, and people are kind of going up for bid.
So Google says, you know, we're interested in buying this, and we'll pay $4.6 billion.
Would that be for continental U.S. or for all U.S. territories?
I think it'd be all U.S.
So basically, United States controlled 700 megahertz is up for grab, and Google's saying they want it.
You're asking way more questions. I'm not an expert on this.
Why would Google want? Why would Google want this?
Well, that's what Don Reisinger is asking. He says, all right, let's think about this a bit. Google is not only wanting to pay for this, but they're telling the FCC that they'll do it, but they have requests. And the requests are that there's open applications for users, open devices that will work with whichever network provider customers choose, open services that would allow for third-party resellers to acquire wireless services on a wholesale basis, and open networks, which would allow third parties, such as internet service providers, to interconnect at any feasible point within the 700 megahertz licensed wireless network. So they want it to be open and free for everybody.
So it's not just phones. It's internet access and phones, kind of like a Wi-Fi cell merge.
So Google is not talking about phones.
Right. They're talking about a new
thing. They're just talking about they want to buy this spectrum, 700 megahertz, and they want to make it open and free for anybody.
Now, when you say, I'm sorry, I was a little unclear, all those things that they want to do, like make it available, other people use it, all those things, is that Google's proposal?
That's Google's proposal. Wow. They said they'll spend $4.6 billion, but only if the SEC guarantees, you know, that they'll make this open to third parties, to service providers, they can use it for internet.
And
the idea is everybody could use it. Would make internet open for everybody, right? So 700 megahertz travels through buildings.
It's one of those great frequencies.
Walls, great, but it has a range, right? But if you've got, like right now, you've got these wireless hotspots, and when you have enough of them and they're all open, you can kind of travel in between.
Right.
It's not actually you have to reacquire. It's really difficult. Think about if you didn't have to do that. If you didn't have to reacquire because you're now connecting to another wireless adapter, you could just travel anywhere in the 700 megahertz band and connect for free.
Now, most companies that kind of made this proposal was a small startup or something, you'd be like, wow, that's a neat, you know, idealistic future. But Google, I mean, they put wireless in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I mean, and for free. So, I'm not sure it's for free, but they do, their model of making money is based on people having access to networks.
Yes.
So, it really could be
so
proposed.
So, people wonder, how would Google make money at this?
Right.
And, you know, they could easily put forth some sort of an iPhone of their own.
Right.
You know, or some, even it may be a phone not as capable, but you'd pay for the cost of the hardware and you could make calls for free. You'd have internet for free.
Right.
You know, it would use the 700 megahertz band here in the U.S. And how many people do you think would ditch their cell phone and their monthly fee?
Okay, so are any of the cell phone companies
to pick
upset
up
about
a
this?
Google phone, even with advertising?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course. But now, are the cell phone companies a little not liking this idea?
Oh, yeah. They're going to cry foul. I mean, AT&T and the rest of the service, the cell phone providers, I think, I mean, they've got some very strong lobbying happening, you know, in Washington, D.C. I'm sure they're going to fight it. But, you know, when they go to the representatives who are using a free 700 megahertz phone, how do you think they're going to reply?
Of course.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for that story. It's kind of exciting. We'll have to keep an eye on it.
So we'll put a link up. There's a lot more to this story than what we talked about, and some good comments too. So
great.
Go check it out. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Miles. Sorry, Sean. Thank you very much, Sean. Miles.
The computer virus turned 25.
Oh, I heard about this. This is great. Computer bug. Let's be clear. Bug turned 25.
No, it was the first computer virus. It was on a 5.25-inch floppy for an Apple II. So an infected Apple II propagated the first computer virus. It didn't do much more than annoy people, but
it shared poetry, right? Bad poetry.
It was written by a 15-year-old high school student, and the virus replicated by monitoring floppy disk activity and writing itself to the floppy when it was accessed.
I think you actually had to boot from the floppy. That was the time when you actually booted your machine on different things, depending on what you were doing. So you'd boot from your floppy, and then it would access other floppies. So it was a bootable virus. That was a story I heard. Maybe I'm
okay.
I'm
yeah,
just
when
reading
you
something.
Yeah, when you load onto it, and then you put in another disk to load up programs.
Right,
right after
then
it was already
that.
In memory. Right. And yeah, this guy, the person who invented the computer virus, was in ninth grade when he did it.
And who is the, is this person around still making viruses or doing other things?
I don't know what he's doing now, but
what a claim to fame, huh?
Yeah, it was a practical joke.
Cool.
It was just considered a, you know, little fun, little practical joke.
All right, 25 years virus. Thank you.
25
much.
Years later, it's a hotbed of extortion and
and
know,
annoyance.
Tort law. Yeah, yeah, tort violations.
Well, thank you very much, Miles. Sean, next story. I know it's quick, but what's up?
The next generation of Microsoft's OS, which used to be called Vienna,
is this now has after Vista.
After Vista, mm-hmm. It now has a new code name. It's 7, as in the number 7.
7.
So, if you ever hear about Microsoft 7, that's actually the successor to Vista. Nobody knows what it's going to have. It's supposed to have a 3-year development cycle.
Yeah, we've heard that before.
But this time they better make it 3 years, right? I mean, they can't do that again.
The whole idea of like right now going, I don't know if I want Vista or XP. Oh, but in 3 years there'll be a new operating system for Microsoft?
Well, it's going to take them 3 years. I mean, I wouldn't guess add or take.
It's going to take them 10 years.
But that's what they're working on. Nobody knows what it's going to entail. But of course, hopefully they'll get Vista in people's machines by then.
Hey, you know, what's up with Vista at this point? Are games being released that can only play on Vista yet? Or are there real incentives to be on Vista?
Yeah, there are games that are being released. Lost Planet, a couple games upcoming, World in Conflict, that offer DirectX 10 compatibility, optimizations over and above DirectX 9. What that means is, in Windows XP supports DirectX 9, and this is an application. Well, it's kind of what games are based on. Games are either based on DirectX or OpenGL, and Microsoft owns and runs DirectX. So DirectX 9 in XP looks beautiful, offers a lot of great gaming potential. Developers know how to write for it. They can do some pretty amazing things visually with DirectX 9 because they've got the experience. With Vista, there's DirectX 10. It offers some new technologies for game developers. Unfortunately, it's different. It's very different. There is a learning curve. It's not going to be easy to code for, so games aren't going to be coming out with DX10 capabilities for a while. But a few are out, and they offer things like, let's say, World in Conflict is a real-time strategy game. It used to be that when you destroyed surfaces in a game, they would pop back to where they were because the hardware couldn't keep the changes in the actual geometry of the game.
You're talking about modifying the geometry. So, blowing up a building.
So DX10, you can actually modify the geometry.
Right.
So if, let's say you're playing a World War II simulation, a bomb hits, right, and creates a divot in the earth, the divot really wasn't there. It was kind of just drawn to make it look like that.
Right.
And tanks would just
drive
over it. DirectX 10 allows that to actually become a huge crater, and the tank can drive into it, which changes your line of sight. It really adds some really interesting perspective to gaming, and it makes things look a little better. Lighting, the soft shadows are better, so it's a lot of visual, and you do need a DirectX 10 capable card and Vista to see that. But there aren't any games that are coming out that just support DX10. They support DX9 and they support DX10
because they want to have a large buy base.
Oh, of
not
course, yeah,
Vista. Sure.
And mostly. The games are pretty much probably were developed for DX9, and they added DX10 capabilities at the end. One game called Company of Heroes came out for DirectX 9, and they've since released a patch for DX10 that makes the game look better.
Right.
So that's kind of where they're at now.
When I spoke with you briefly last week, you said that some of the stuff you'd be doing this week is testing some of at work is kind of testing some of this DirectX 10
and
some of your cards. Get around to that?
No, I didn't.
Oh, darn. So you haven't really played one.
You know
of
what happened is Intel on Monday released their next gen CPUs. Next generation. It's the Core 2, but with a faster front side bus. So instead of running at 1,066 megahertz, and it's running at 1,333 megahertz. And the front side bus connects the CPU itself to what's called the North Bridge, which contains the memory controller. The memory is connected to the North Bridge. So the front side bus is really important for the CPU to communicate with memory, and they've increased the speed of that. And they've also released chips that run at 3 gigahertz now. So they've got a quad-core chip. The QX6850 is a 1333 front-side bus chip that runs at 3 gigahertz. And then they have an E6850, which is a dual-core that runs at 3 gigahertz. So you're getting a bump in processor speed, and you're getting a faster front-side bus, but you need a motherboard that supports it.
See, through all of that, I have just in the back of my head, just, you know, playing 1.21 gigawatts.
Yeah.
All the numbers being bandied about. And then, of course, there's Alex online saying, and the North Bridge is connected to the funny bone. And
it's crazy. But you know what it comes... What's interesting is, as Intel releases these new chips, you know, it makes their older chips cheaper.
Yeah.
There's price reductions.
And these older chips are not that old. I mean,
you can buy a cutting-edge chip now for $200.
Okay, what do you recommend right now for the cutting-edge chip for $200?
Anything with a Core 2 Duo, right? You can get a Core. Yeah, I would get a Core 2. I think Intel is actually making their new 1333 chips cheaper than their older 1066 chips because they want to make their newest motherboard only, you know, it supports the faster speeds. They want to sell more of those motherboards.
Right.
So I don't know. I think it's good for everyone that the fact that the prices of these chips are coming down.
Yeah.
And right now, I personally wouldn't buy a Core 2 without 4 megs cache. Because I'm more of a power user, and I really see the performance benefits of the 4 meg versus, you know, the 2 meg. If you just want to spend less than $100, you can buy a Core 2 right now.
Right.
Pretty good speed.
So basically, because of that release of Intel and their cheaper chips or better chips, you weren't able to look at games this week. Have you been hearing a little bit of the coverage of E3 and one of the new cool games that are out there? Because I've been hearing a little bit about this in a few podcasts and stuff. It looks like, Sean, you and I have to start playing some games pretty soon.
We do. You know, I thought it was more interesting about E3, which is the big entertainment expo down in L.A. It used to be this huge, loud event, you know, 120 decibel everywhere you walked. It's just crazy. That's gone.
Yeah.
Now
they had a little hanger for some of their stuff.
Now it's just it's getting just editors together. It's invite, you know, pretty much you've got to be somebody to get into this thing. Very restrictive, and they don't have these big displays anymore. It's more of a one-on-one with game developers. So I was kind of more reading about the change in E3 and how people think they should just rename the show,
right?
Because it's not E3 anymore.
Right. It's just a show. It's just a conference.
So we got to talk about games. And. And they were mostly console games, from what I...
Yeah.
Well, people are more excited about the console stuff.
There's quite a few new games that sound pretty interesting to me.
You really got to have a show.
There's like a couple... There's a superhero-type game that sounds pretty interesting. We'll do this at a later date. Thank you, Sean, for the update on whatever it was that we started that whole discussion about.
There's so much going on
for being here
in tech right now. It's crazy.
Miles, you want to give us a little taste of the next news story?
Right. Very quickly, one laptop per child... program, giving laptops cheap but very powerful computers to
everybody in the
children
world.
In developed countries, especially young children in primary school. Turns out that they are finding that some Nigerian school children who receive those laptops from a U.S. aid organization are using it to browse porn. A lot. So
how do they know that?
Because they found the images stored on the laptops. Saved. So it's something I wanted to get some input from the listeners as well, so what they thought of that. Like, you have this item that can be a great mechanism for education, that can be used as an electronic book. It has very flexible power requirements, so you can use it anywhere. If a lot of times where you don't have classrooms, you may not even have a teacher, so you have this thing that allows...
Okay, so what's the question for all of us?
So... what they're planning on doing is applying filters to them so that certain sites are blocked out. So is that a slippery slope where you're blocking things out, and how much is considered harmful and how much is considered natural curiosity about human sexuality?
Yeah. All right. That's a great, great question to start off with. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to GeekSpeak. We are taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. Miles has just put forth the question of, if we're starting to give computers to every child in the world, what kind of responsibility do we have to filter the knowledge that they can get through those computers? Because, of course, some stuff is not very appealing, but it's a great empowering tool. So where does that line, and how do we make that work? The numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, the phone numbers are 476-2800, or toll-free anywhere in California, 1-800-655-5877. In fact, you know, this 800 number I hear all the time, we always say it's California only. In fact, I was in Nevada and Utah last week, or 2 weeks ago when you guys did the show, and I was able to call in. So try this number, 1-800-655-5877. And you can, of course, send us email. Just go to geekspeak.org. Stay with KOSB for Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. And this is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. You're listening to Geekspeak. My name is Lyle Troxell. Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland are also here. We're taking any calls with questions and comments of technology. Rick Philman is patiently waiting for your calls. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. Now, as we wait for the calls to come in, I'll give you my feeling on the one laptop per child thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the issue is not... I think the issue is the idea of making sure that everybody agrees that the program is a good program. Like, I'm not so concerned what the children do on them, honestly, because I'm not the parent. And I'm concerned about the idea of, you know, here's some technology, and we're going to tie your hands a bit with it. Because it's totally against the whole idea of the One Laptop Per Child program. One Laptop Per Child program is very into the idea of you can learn everything about this computer. This is a machine, and you're open to look into it, reprogram it, do anything you want.
Yes, you can, but we're talking about a network filter that may not be on the laptop itself.
Well, that's fine, but that means, well, yeah, I don't know, back and forth. I'm kind of like, I'd be okay with it as long as the individual user somehow was able to turn the filter off. And maybe at a local school level, maybe there's some responsible contact person that's like, this is the teacher that oversees these students, and they're kind of responsible, and they get to decide whether that laptop has the filter on or not.
Right. Well, I've also worked for a filtering company before,
yeah.
And it's a hard problem.
It is.
It's not something you can just say, all right, look for any activity that finds a pornographic image.
Right.
One,
what's a pornographic image?
I know. One,
right.
What is it, and where is the line drawn, and then how do you identify it? I mean, there's no computer heuristics that can catch that in real time and then stop it before it shows
right.
up.
So then you're thinking about basically making, like the company you used to work for made a giant listing of sites that had bad stuff and sites that had good stuff, and they did it that way. That means that one person decides what site is.
But then comes raising the question, this is a story about pornography showing up on these laptops.
Yes.
And who knows if they mean by pornography just naked people or something that's much more severe or graphic. And yet, I don't really see any notice of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of times we don't consider
sure.
violence as strongly. Like, it doesn't mobilize people
right.
to action.
There are some horrible, horrible images online.
Right. And
I mean, violent ones as well as pornographic.
So, like, if I had the choice between having a child look at a news story and see a graphic image of war versus seeing a bare breast,
right?
I'd prefer the latter.
You think? Okay, but that's your decision, and that's the concern that really is. You know, if this filtering system's not on the laptop, it's filtering knowledge in general. We, you know, China has asked Google and Yahoo and everything to filter knowledge that goes to their citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at least a sovereign nation,
yeah.
and the people
and
understand
do, yeah.
that, and the people in general understand that's happening. But when you're going to a situation where you're saying, here's a new world of knowledge and information, and there is a big brother, that's different. It's interesting.
Except for the fact that when you're talking about children, you still have that issue of children are not allowed to do everything.
Well,
in the physical world.
In this country.
Oh, well,
in
no,
world,
in the physical
sure.
world. Like, parents are constantly saying, you know, you're not allowed to do this until you are age X.
Sure.
So, I mean, doesn't that seem to correlate with
But see, don't you like
the online
Okay, world? I don't want to go too far into this, of course, because I do want to take people's calls of anything. We'll take any questions today. We'll help you with your hard drive or help you run virus protection. I don't know. What else do you guys want to deal with today? Anything, basically. But good ideas. Building a new computer out. How do you support
yeah.
your grandmother? I don't know. I mean, call in with anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 2800. Again, that's 476-2800. And that's in the 831 area code, by the way. Or you can call us with 1-800-655-5877. Again, 1-800-655-5877. And I guess we do have a call. I'll take a look at who that is.
It's Lee from Amsterdam.
Oh, wow. He doesn't call in very often. That's great.
I don't think he's ever called in.
No? Lee, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hello.
Hello, Lee.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, this is Lee in Amsterdam. I have a question about LinkedIn.
Yes.
Every now and then, well-meaning people that I know send me an email with an invitation to the LinkedIn web service. And I hope you guys can explain this to me, because you know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like John Ashcroft's total information awareness, where they collect all the information. So can you give me some more detail about what that is?
Are you familiar with MySpace?
No.
Or Friendster? They're social networking.
But MySpace sites, a little bit. I know it's like web pages that people make, home pages.
Yeah. Right. LinkedIn's much the same thing, except it's for professionals. It's considered for the professional world.
So Lee, I think I invited you to my LinkedIn. Actually, I don't know if you participate or not. But basically, the idea is, and Sean, you do this, and Miles, and we are all connected.
I do this, yeah.
In fact,
I just don't get it, because I go to their page and I look at their homepage, like you're going to register, and I don't get it. But everybody likes it, and I just don't understand it.
Well, I think it's an interesting question.
You know, what's interesting is it gets you in contact with people that you've lost contact with.
And it is
really quickly.
It is a total information awareness.
It is. It is total information. I mean, if you have nothing to hide, then then it's certainly I recommend using it. So I joined, and I was really shocked by the number of people I got in contact with that I had lost contact with. And the way it works is, when you first join, it asks you what companies did you work at and what dates did you work there. Well, once you put that information in, It then says, all right, you worked at, you know, company A. All of these people also worked at company A at the same time you did. You might know some of them. And it gives you a list of names, and you'll be surprised by how many you know. And you select them, and you say, hey, I used to work with you. Would you like to join my LinkedIn? And it gets you in contact with them. And through that service, I've gotten in touch with
105 people is how many people
I have 105 people I'm in contact with, and I can contact them at any time. They're
and
like
Miles,
right yeah. there for
Miles,
me.
Miles, you only have 35 people.
Okay.
Sean's loved more than you.
And if I try to break this down into non-real time, so you've got a web page. This is what they're looking at your web page, but it's like a private page with a password?
Okay, so you create an account, and when you log in, you make a profile, and the profile basically is like your resume. So you list all the jobs. In fact, you can actually import your resume, and it will create links.
So essentially, it is a resume.
It's a resume.
And then what it does is everybody that adds into this resume, it'll say, you know, I worked at, like Miles and I met each other through a company called Feed the Monster Media. That company no longer exists, but there's a whole bunch of people in LinkedIn that also put in their resume Feed the Monster Media. Well, Miles and I pretty much know everybody that worked for that company because it was around for a short period of time and we were there for a while. And so I see names that I go, oh, yeah, that guy Greg from marketing. Oh, yeah, that's his last name. I never would have found him. I never would have talked to him. So then I say, hey, Greg, you know, I think this is you. And he goes, oh, yeah, Lyle, I remember you too. And then we say, what are you working at? Oh, he's working at Disney now, and he's doing website development. And pretty soon it's like, oh, well, I need a developer. So it's this way of kind of reconnecting with people. And then also
– and leaving recommendations.
Yes.
To say this person is hot. You know,
yeah.
If you see this person and they're available, grab them.
I've gotten job offers through LinkedIn.
Huh. Yeah. So it's a job.
Well, if you're looking for a job, you definitely want to get involved with LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Well, one more question then. So everything sounds great, but there's got to be some negative stuff to it.
Well, yeah. Some corporation knows everybody you know, and they know who that is. And, I mean, yeah, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, so a corporation would know that. With regard to Big Brother, with regard to like the government, I don't know that it would cause any real privacy concerns because the government has, or at least for U.S. citizens, because the government already has. There's a little river here. Because the government already has our W-2 forms, already
right,
has
they,
our
they know that
our tax
well,
information.
At least the U.S. government knows where we've worked.
Right.
Some
so this
sure.
is a question of a
okay. Well, I'm thinking of like stalkers.
No, for stalkers, it's kind of scary. But for this situation, you can when you create your account, you're kind of deciding. Every one of your contacts, you can decide whether how much information they see of you.
You have some control.
Yeah, you do have control. There's a little bit of granularity. So somebody I don't know very well, for example, I might not let them see all of who I know on my
and
system.
Can people trash you?
They could say bad things about you, I guess. But, you know,
okay.
People are unlikely to do that. Of course, you can unconnect from them.
Okay.
I've never had that happen. I've never been...
Well, that's because you're such a cool person.
Yeah, I've never even seen...
But see, this is a perfect example. Like, you've done some volunteer work for KOSP, and you've been listening to the show and give us feedback every once in a while, so we all kind of know you, even though this is the first time we've ever spoken with you, I think. And if you're on the system and you're then looking for a job, you might find that three people in California are giving you good reviews, right? And so these people are like, the company that might be hiring you is like, oh, well, he's well-liked from people in California, so we shouldn't hire him. I mean, that, you know, that might be... Something okay. that works for
or you know,
it's kind of a reputation system like Flashdot.
It is.
And let's say you want to get a job somewhere and you've got all these contacts, there's a good chance that you might know somebody who actually works at the company. Or you know what? So there are different levels, right? So how does it work? What's the terminology they use for they're in your sphere, right?
Yes.
So you've got these friends that you're directly connected to. Well, they have friends too. Maybe you don't know them, but maybe they're in a position that you want to get in contact with one of those people that your friend knows. Well, they can actually get you in contact with them and introduce you.
Hmm. For example, Sean knows somebody that works at Blue Arc Corporation. I would never have known that. But currently that person that Sean knows somehow actually works at a company called Blue Arc. Now, if I was going for a job there, I might go, hey, Sean, can you introduce me to this person? So then Sean actually sends a note through the system to his friend at Blue Arc that says, hey, my friend's looking for a job at your company. He's really great. Gives you kind of a recommendation. That person at that company is much more likely to look at my resume when it comes in because a friend recommended me. So that's the kind of reason the system is functional.
Yeah, all of Silicon Valley uses LinkedIn.
And the privacy issues, and the privacy issues are kind of minor because for me, I've posted my resume on my website for, I don't know, since... 90-something, right? And so where I worked and when I worked there has been public knowledge for a long time. Now, I don't also...
And you've never had any negative repercussions from that?
Oh, like I don't know. I haven't gotten jobs sometimes when I went for resumes. Maybe they looked at my resume and said, oh, that he's a radio guy. I don't want him. I don't know.
Yeah, my profile is public on LinkedIn. I have my resume up there.
Yeah, I think my stuff is public, too. I don't spend a lot of time on it because I'm pretty happy with my job, so I'm not using it. But
yeah.
I'd be using it more if I was looking for a job.
You know, I've gotten in contact with an old friend through LinkedIn, and it's kind of cool.
It really is like the professional space, like MySpace, but a professional level. So the website's called LinkedIn.com, and if you know any of the geeks, go ahead and try to find us and hook up with us. That'd be great.
Yeah. I'll register now, and I'll come and look at your home pages. Thank you, geek.
Thank you so much for calling in.
My treat.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I guess it comes down to just in general with online, don't put up any information online that you don't want to have public.
Right. Even if it is in a protected environment, because you don't know what that company is going to do with
it. And your email is not here in it.
It's hidden. It's all hidden.
And you've got to actually have a contact, be in direct contact with them, for them to be able to contact you.
Yeah, and that's why you say if you're a step away from a person, you have to kind of ask your contact to introduce you to their contact.
Yeah.
It's a great way of going. Well, we do have other calls coming in, but I'd be happy to take more. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. If you're outside the country, we'll have to do the 831-476-2800. And, of course, area code of 1, like Lee from Amsterdam just did. Such a kick that he called in. I like to hear his voice.
I kind of wish Alex were online. He's giving such great information on an instant message thread.
You know, I don't have time to read the stuff that Alex writes because I talk too much. But
well,
maybe,
that
Alex,
can't
if you
read.
Want to... Oh, there. That. Okay. Don from Santa Cruz, welcome to Geek Speak.
Is that me?
That's you, Don.
Okay, Don. All right. The question is about banks and about banks pretending that there are no computers and that there are no telephones. Have you ever run into this?
In what way?
All right. I'm hoping you guys can look backstage and tell me, oh, yes, that's the way they do this. They don't want to do something that you're asking them to do, so they pretend that they can't do it.
Okay.
All right, here's what happened. I suggested, because they put a hold on a check that was going to stop my card from working and stop my money flow for 7 days, I said, well, just call my source company where the money's, you know, where the check is written from. And I'll help you verify my identity, and then you can verify the funds. And they looked at me like they were in a Wells Fargo bank in 1860 that didn't know anything about a telephone. And then I talked to the manager, and I suggested the same thing. 2 days later, they called me up and said, we've called your source company, and they verified the funds, and everything's all right.
Okay.
Now, I've run into this on many occasions. And here's my question. is this the way they behave when they don't want to do something? Because they really do seem to be acting like there are no computers and there are no telephones.
Well, this is a great time when we should have Alex on the phone, considering he does big security. He's on a chat service. Alex, if you want to call in, that'd be
Alex
really great.
Alex said government regulations require many separate systems and tight controls.
Yes.
You really don't want two banks to have access to each other's information, financial information, easily, because that means, I mean, there's reasons why there's separations between networks.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So
they could have rules that make things difficult for banks to do things that are more convenient like that, because they open security risks.
Right. Yep. And with regard to calling that source to find out if the funds are okay, what happens if someone comes in with a check and then it has some number to a bogus entity that's just someone who's registered a phone number and they answer, you know, scamming it? The bank is going to become liable.
Well, I figured they would verify the number before they used any number I gave them.
Right, which of course takes time.
Yes.
And so considering the number of customers that a bank would have, you know, I'm sure I could see them. You're right in that area. They don't want to do that because also if they do take that extra time and effort and go off the beaten trail, then they are opening themselves up to liability.
And yeah, they're involving more risk. And the FCC is pretty. I mean, FFIEC. Uh-huh. So it is very clear about the rules governing banks.
Right, Federal Financial Institutions Examination Council.
Thanks, Miles.
Okay. So what's strange to me is that. What I suggested that they should do is what they actually ended up doing.
Perfect.
Yeah. Just took them 2 days.
Well, probably
it took
also
them 2 days, yeah. You know. They even cited the Patriot Act in order to back me off, and I was rolling my eyes. You know, I just couldn't believe. They talked about money laundering. Does this make sense?
Well, yeah. I mean, money laundering is a major issue for banks. When you're dealing with a lot of finances, if rules are not done the way they're done, then money laundering becomes more possible. I mean, there's reasons for these rules. Now, I think you're right, though. I think this customer service rep just wanted to get you off the phone.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this person's making whatever amount of money, and they don't want to do that. And
uh-huh.
I would also consider, you know, if you're having bad experiences with your bank, switch banks and tell them why, and hopefully things will get better in this arena.
Uh-huh.
Thank you so much.
I am thinking. All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Don, for the
bye-bye.
Call. Bye-bye.
I know, I get a sense of laziness, too, from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there is.
Service organizations.
But at the same time, those organizations, I'm sure you've worked for them, you have your job duties, and then someone comes in saying, oh, hey, I have these other things.
Here's a curveball.
On top of your already busy workday, everyone does this. It's really inconvenient when a bank does it because it's your money and you're trying to get access to it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everyone does this.
I don't do it.
Yeah.
That's because you're Lyle Troxel.
From Seaside, Susan. Susan from Seaside, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question today, Susan?
I went away for a few weeks, and my son, who's a Mac user, got a hold of my PC laptop that runs Windows 2000.
Oh, no, this is a bad story.
I know.
Go on.
Yeah. Well, so he invited a couple of viruses onto my computer, and I've done everything I could do within my power because I'm not a geek, and I can't get rid of it. I can't. It's a pop-up virus.
Is your son a geek?
No.
So, a Macintosh user started using a Windows machine and didn't understand that Windows machines are really temperamental about inviting everything in.
He didn't update the updates when they needed to be updates, and he used shareware probably, and who knows what.
And this is a Windows 2000 machine?
Yeah. And I can't afford to buy a new machine. That's
okay. What's the pop-up look like? When it pops up, is it saying it's Internet Explorer?
Yeah. All right. And, you know, it actually echoes my searches. I tend to use Firefox. It echoes my searches, and it'll bring up an Internet Explorer Windows thing. Oh, try this site.
So you got a keylogger in there, most likely. If she's in Firefox and then it opens up a separate program.
Are you using Firefox? I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part.
I'm using Firefox, but it opens an Internet Explorer.
Okay, keylogger.
So why can't she get rid of this, Miles, with a good virus protection software? What are you using for virus protection?
I was using, it wasn't Norton, the other one. It wasn't McAfee. There's one other one.
This actually sounds even more like spyware. Like outside the realm of an antivirus vendor, be more like spyware.
No. It might even be owned by Norton now. I just can't think of what it is.
You need Adaware. by law.
But does that support Windows 2000?
I couldn't get Attaware work for me.
Yeah, I think it's only an XP application.
Mm.
I got SpyBot got so far, and then but it disabled my normal antivirus software. I can't even find it.
Okay, guys, geeks, what would you guys do?
Antivirus software is not going to help
off,
you.
Really? Because it's already installed and such?
Because this is ad stuff.
Ad stuff, yeah.
It's spyware.
And, so
and it's not virus, it's spyware.
It's an application installed. Right.
That's right. It's spyware. Yeah. Okay, that's different than a virus.
Well, it's, lots of times they're installed via viruses, so there's a lot of connections here. But what would you get, Miles, what would you do if this was your parents' machine?
I know the first thing I'm going to ask you is, what do you use the computer for?
I used to use it to just do internet research.
So, I mean, you do web browsing, you do email.
I do a lot of web browsing. I used to do it to do my finances. I don't do that anymore.
You don't do that anymore?
My personal computer. I use it for everything that you use a personal computer for.
Okay.
See, Miles, you're going to suggest...
It's not being functional right now. Miles, it's disconnected from the internet. It's just sitting there.
I'm guessing Miles is going to suggest installing, like, Linux on it.
No, I was going to say get a live Ubuntu CD and just boot up the CD and... play with that way, especially if you have someone else using your computer.
And Alex says the only thing to really make sure your machine's going to be safe is to do a reinstall, clean reinstall, which is a lot of work.
Sean, what would you do?
Yeah, don't do any financial stuff on that computer.
No. And as a matter of fact, I think that I'm going to have to reset all my passwords, and I've been slowly doing that.
Yeah,
anyway.
And reset all the passwords not on that machine.
No, not on that machine. And I'm going to put a fraud alert on my it occurred to me to put a fraud alert on my...
Yeah, you might as well, unless you're planning on doing anything.
You know, Windows 2000 is just an old OS, and you're going to have a tough time finding software that's compatible.
The problem. Sure.
And the problem with upgrading is the hardware may not support, you know, a newer OS like Windows XP. So that's something to consider, too. But
that's the thing, though. She's using an older version of Windows that isn't... I mean, that is causing a whole bunch of problems right here, and... she's not using a very wide variety of programs. Ubuntu might be the way to go.
Can you get that mailed to you?
Yes, you can. Unfortunately, you have to look online for the address.
Really? Really? What Miles is recommending, it will run on even the slowest hardware.
I think it would work really well.
So it's worth a try. It's not going to hurt you. It's not going to cost you anything.
So go to
Ubuntu.org.
Ubuntu.com.
Are you breaking up? What is it called?
Ubuntu. Miles.
Ubuntu.com. UBUNTU.
You know what? Why don't you send us an email? Send an email to geeks@geekspeak.org, and we'll send you directions on what to do.
That's the thing is your machine's going to pop up warnings and do all this stuff. But if you're not doing a lot of personal information, the worst your machine's going to be doing is spamming or getting your address book and spamming everybody. So don't send email to us, but go to our website and fill out our form because I don't want to get spam from your machine.
Right.
But
I'll send it from my office.
Yeah, send it from your office, fine. And what you can do is we'll give you some instructions, but basically we're going to say go to Ubuntu and ask them to send you a CD. I think it costs a little bit of money, doesn't it? Is it totally free?
No, requesting a free CD. Let's see here. I'd have to find out a little bit more.
It's going
to
be cheap, though. It's going to be like postage.
And if you want to get the computer, if you want to get some good advice, take it down to a local computer store. If you're in Santa Cruz... we recommend Santa Cruz Electronics.
Yeah.
Those guys know more about this stuff than we do.
They deal with it every day. That's a really good point. You could bring in your computer and your Windows 2000 CD, and they will install that again for you.
I don't have my Windows 2000 CD.
Yeah, well, try this. You're going to get a disk that's a Ubuntu disk. You're going to actually ask them to mail it to you. That's a lot better than downloading it and trying to deal with it.
Okay.
You mail it to you, they're going to cost, I don't know, something like under $5. And you put that in your computer, and you might have to run something on your Windows, and then your machine reboots, and it starts running off that CD, and you'll have a completely new operating system. And if you like it and can do the things you want to do on it, then you can say install this on your computer, and it will kind of move stuff out of the way and transfer your files over, and then you'll have a new operating system. You won't be running Windows anymore. And the only reason we recommend this is because you're already running Windows 2000, you have to some degree slower hardware, which will not run on Vista. Vista won't work effectively. XP is going to work, but not... like better or anything than what you're doing now.
I am not opposed to what you're suggesting at all.
Give it a shot.
So I'm basically uninstalling Windows and putting. What did you say? Linux? Is that it? Is that what it is?
Ubuntu Linux.
Ubuntu Linux.
They're selling it on Amazon apparently. $10.
$10. That seems a little high, but
Well,
that's like a great solution, guys.
Okay, good. Well, tell us how it goes for you, please. We'd love to hear.
Okay.
And if you can also send us questions and stuff, just go to geekspeak.org, and sometimes we even respond. Thank you so much, Susan, for the call.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I think we should make this clear. Unless you really want to run games, there's no reason why you can't run Ubuntu.
Or Photoshop.
Well,
or there's a lot.
If you have programs that are made for Windows that are integral to your business or to your general day-to-day life, then you can't. But if you are just using it for web browsing and email, which is what most people use their computers for, then...
But even if you want to look at raw pictures or do some photo editing, there is software that allows you to do that in Ubuntu.
Yes. So basically, if you have a large investment in capital in software for Windows, that sticks you on Windows. If you don't have that investment in software, there's no reason not to move over to Ubuntu.
If you're using Word documents and you're surfing the web...
And there are games for Ubuntu. There are good games, you know, OpenGL games that work for Linux.
It's not the same... Well, I mean, if you play Solitaire all day or Minesweeper, then you're set.
All right, we're going to take one more call today. Rocky, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, thanks.
Hey, Rocky, what region are you calling from?
I'm from Northern California.
Okay.
I wanted to respond to your question about possible filters for internet content accessed by kids receiving these low-cost computers.
Sure,
love to hear. It's a great question, and like all of your show, I really appreciate your addressing that. Obviously, it's like related to similar subject, you know, the internet in China. It's even, you know, the same question, I think, of how do parents monitor their own children's use here in the USA.
Mm-hmm.
So what I really have is a question for you is, could you use some kind of an activity log on these machines so that, you know, whoever the supervising partner is to these kids, I mean, who knows? I mean, parent, teacher,
something like that.
Some authority figure. So they could look at what the kids have done. And, you know, if they've gone to some site that the authority figure doesn't approve of, then, okay, there's some discussion and maybe that.
So you're kind of doing the same thing I did, is go, let's find a local authority figure, teacher, parent, and put the onus on them to manage their children's access to the world.
But significantly, I think instead of them deciding by fiat, prior to, you know, child activity, what they can or cannot see. Because, of course, it's not just about pornography. It's about, you know, it's about political news. It's about all kinds of information.
Well, Rocky, thank you very much. We're running out of time on GeekSpeak, but thank you for that insight.
That's a great point.
Great. Thank you for the call, too. The Geeks this morning were Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland answering the phone. Rick Fellman, thank you all very much for being here, guys.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Lyle?
And Sean, what's going on tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. on This American Life. Stories from graduates and current students of special education. A news team staffed entirely by developmentally delayed correspondents puts on a weekly TV news program. A young boy is born with a rare chromosome disease that causes him to become bipolar at the age of 3. And a developmentally disabled man explains why an assembly job at the Assisted Work Center isn't all it's cracked up to be. Imagine that. Tomorrow on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
Today is National Junk Food Day, so you have reason to be gluttonous if you want. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. I wanted to dedicate the show today to Julianne May, and our thoughts are with you. The loss of Tim May was a great loss to the university and to us personally. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Auto. We're on the web at kusp.org. So we'll be back next week at 10 a.m. on Saturdays, as we are every week here on KUSP.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available voice-activated navigation. More at acura.com/RDX.